guys, welcome back to another episode of Chase the Unknown. Today we are back. I'm with Trinity Dobbs. My name is Roger Sisk. I'm one of your co-hosts here.
Like I said,
I'm here with Trinity Dobbs, my co-host, and we have Audrey Goodman with us, who's a certified Enneagram coach, correct?
Yes, it's good to be here.
So how long you haven't been doing coaching for very long, right?
No, so I started my certification program back in January, and I took it really, really slowly. So I officially became certified in the beginning of August.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow, that's really not that long.
Yeah, it's
not. A couple months. Let me ask you this. So how long is the program normally?
A certification program?
Yeah.
So mine was actually go at your own pace. It was only 10 lessons. On the actual Enneagram, but you have to pass a test to be able to get your certification in the first place. So if you don't have a base level knowledge of the Enneagram, you can't try to become a coach to begin with. So you have to
take a test to get into the program.
Exactly.
And then you have to take the test to be certified.
Right.
Okay. Because I was going to ask is because you said you started doing it in January and you completed the course in August. So that's pretty much most of the duration of COVID. So I was wondering if COVID had an impact on how quickly you got it done versus.
You know, that's an interesting question. It actually did. It slowed me down a lot.
Oh, it slowed you down. I would have thought it would have sped you up.
Yeah. So believe it or not, even though it opened up a ton of time that I could have used to work on my certification, I work a lot better in a structured environment.
I see.
And I work a lot better on a schedule. And so there was definitely a period of probably 2.5 months during COVID where I was not a productive person. And I felt a level of guilt for that. I need to be doing my certification program. I need to be working more on my business class. I need to be creating more. But what I tried to tell myself was, hey, we're going through a global pandemic. There's a level of emotional burden with that. Our schedules are being thrown off. And so there's grace for maybe not being as productive because guess what? Our value is not based on our productivity.
This is actually not related at all, but I've actually found myself being less productive since August and September than I did the entire duration of March, April, and May.
Yeah.
March, April, and May, I was more productive in those 3 months than I have been in the past 2 months combined.
Exactly. And this is actually, I wasn't going to go into this right now. I was going to save this for later. But something you just mentioned, I think it's a great springboard off of. You mentioned value. You know, I've heard the main, I'm familiar with Enneagram. If you aren't, we can kind of give a rundown of what it is in a minute here.
For sure.
But one of the main kind of, I wouldn't say criticisms I've heard of the Enneagram and personality typing of that sort is, of people being, I don't need a number to define me, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I think my response just from the knowledge I do have on the Enneagram and, Myers-Briggs and testing, that type of testing, I've always said, you obviously, your number does not define you. But by knowing kind of, by having kind of a structural way of kind of thinking about how not only you think, but others think, it kind of can act as a guide to help you relate and understand other people and how to serve them better.
Oh, absolutely. You know? There's definitely a relational component to Enneagram work, for sure.
Exactly. It's meant to be that. It's not there to say, this is you. It's meant to be a guide and say, okay, do you relate to this? Here's potentially how this other person could be relating to you.
Oh my gosh, 100%.
And so in a way, it's almost like I've heard the language used of it's a relational code book almost. Because lots of different peoples, lots of issues are just code book issues in terms of you kind of have your code book of how you think and feel, and then another person may have an entirely different code book of how they operate, and so a tool like Enneagram or Myers-Briggs or whatever it is, it may kind of be the bridge between those code books for you to kind of help understand each other in a healthy way so you can have those conversations that you need, not only for healthy community, but for conflict resolution, etc.
Man, that's a perfect summary of why on a relationship or a relational level the Enneagram is useful 100%. You know, another thing I would also say on that is that I know that people, I mean, we all feel unique, and we are unique, we are special. And so looking at a system like the Enneagram with nine types, people are tempted to say, like, there's no way that there are nine types of people. And my answer to that is exactly, just like you said, there are not nine types of people. And the Enneagram is not supposed to be self-limiting, because the thing is, we're already self-limiting. We already operate on unconscious patterns and behavioral patterns, ways of thinking that have become ingrained in us over the years that we might not even be fully aware of. And so the Enneagram is one tool that we have to bring those things that kind of happen in the background without us even realizing to the forefront of our attention, so that we then have agency and control over those things. So instead of being limiting, it takes the limits that we put on ourselves off if we use it correctly.
Good. And that could, like you said, it could even be a kind of the exact opposite of what I mentioned you of, oh, I'm not a number, blah, blah, blah. They're kind of thinking it, that type of thinking is almost like, oh, okay, it's putting me in a box. But what you're saying is it does the exact opposite of that, as opposed to putting you in a box. It takes those limits off you to be able to think broader.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. Before we get too deep into it, explain exactly what the Enneagram is for the people who don't know.
Okay, so the short answer, which, I mean, I don't love this answer, but the short answer is that the Enneagram is a system of nine personality types based on a core desire. And the long answer is a little bit has a little bit more depth than that. Mm-hmm. So yes, it is nine types. But more so than being a personality system where it's like, this person loves to go to work and this person works super hard, and, you know, and then it would just like list a series of traits. Instead, the Enneagram says these are nine core desires that are innate to people. Mm-hmm. And each type, one of these desires is greater in each type than the others. Mm-hmm. So there are nine desires. I'll go ahead and list them now. The first one is the desire for moral righteousness. The second one is the desire to be loved. The third is to be valuable or successful. The fourth is to belong or to be understood and seen for who you are. The fifth is to be competent and useful. The sixth is to be safe and secure. The seventh is to be fun and unlimited, or satisfied would be another way to put that. The eighth is to be free of being controlled by others. And the ninth is to be at peace. These are the nine values or the core motivations that the Enneagram is based off of. And each type takes one of those values for their own. And because there are nine motivations, there are also nine fears, right? So if you have the core desire more than anything to be morally righteous, that comes along with a fear of being bad or being wrong. If you have the desire, the core desire to be loved, then that comes along with the fear of not receiving love. And we can go down the list of how these desires pair up with a fear. Yeah. And this, this desire and this fear together create your motivation, and your motivation then recreates behaviors, creates responses to your environment, creates a worldview, right?
Oh, totally.
And so this is the heart of the Enneagram. It's motivation. It's why you do what you do, not necessarily just what you do.
Exactly. And like I just mentioned a moment ago, you know, just even from that simple description right there, I feel like people, if they haven't heard of the Enneagram in the past, may already start to see some of those connections of being able to kind of form that bridge between those code books between people. For giving, it's giving language for when you don't have it.
Exactly.
It's meant to be a helper in that way. What are, and I know there's not descriptions, but there's a name for each number. What are those?
Yeah, so maybe I should just go ahead and give you the type descriptions in general. So let's start. Just a brief
type of each description, that'd be awesome.
For sure. Let's start with type one. So I like to call type one the improver. They have a couple different names, the perfectionist, the reformer, and the improver. I prefer the improver because type ones they desire to be morally righteous. They see the world in terms of good and evil, right and wrong, justice and injustice, and therefore they have a strong desire to make the world right by the way that they see is right.
Very black and white.
They can be black and white. They can be perfectionistic. They have a strong inner critic because since they desire to be morally righteous, they have a voice in their head that tells them very strongly when they are not. Yes. And that can create a lot of shame and a lot of frustration with the world. But our ones are also the ones that, you know, they develop systems. They keep things in line. They are have a strong desire for justice, like I mentioned. So our ones are very important. Yeah. And we've got type two. Type two can be called the helper or the giver. Type twos desire more than anything to be loved. And they fear that if they're not useful, if they have too many needs, if they are not what everybody wants them to be, that they won't earn or deserve love. And so twos will go out of their way to be necessary to people and to be helpful to them so that they can earn that love.
Yeah.
So twos tend to be like extremely warm, compassionate, caring people. They tend to be extremely generous. But that can also come at a cost, right, of them not getting their own needs met. And they yeah. can end up running themselves into the ground and feeling unvalued by the people around them. If they don't receive the same love in return that they give.
Totally. I personally would say I identify as a two for, ever since I initially found, out about the Enneagram and since I went online and took the test that you can take online for free, I basically kind of right out of the bat hit off of, related to all of that, because I've totally yeah. been in that situation of, you know, for me, it's very easy to give, but learning that I have to kind of keep in check that, okay, for me, it's a big thing is it's okay not to give all the time.
Wow. Yeah.
It's absolutely. Okay. I need to give myself permission to be selfish, if that makes sense, at times.
That's a and so that's been huge a big, for the two. Yeah.
That's been a big thing for me.
That's a hard thing to accept about yourself, especially at someone like me. I don't know if I would classify myself as a complete two, but that part of me I could see being part of me. That's something I have a struggle with is I give all the time, but I need to give it to myself as well.
Are you familiar with the Enneagram at all, Trinity?
I am actually. Okay.
I wasn't sure if you had been or not.
I've taken the test, and the last time I took the test, which was about, I want to say, a year ago, I came out more as a one, as a perfectionist, which makes a lot of sense for me, because I am a perfectionist, and I admit that boldly.
Oh, yeah.
He knows. but I tend to be very structured and tend to be like, well, I got to be on time to everything and very systematic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I come across that way.
Exactly.
But please go through the rest of
them. Oh, yeah. Number three.
Go through the rest of them because not everybody's going to be like Roger and me who are ones and twos.
For sure. Okay, so type three, they are the achievers, or sometimes called the performer. And that is because they do in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. And threes are deeply fearful of not being successful or valuable. They believe that they need to earn the right to have worth. It's a little bit similar to the two, except instead of focusing on earning love and value through giving, they're more focused on earning love and earning value.
They're more career focused more than family focused.
Could be career, or maybe they see family as the height of success.
That's true.
Right?
That's
or
good.
Yeah, or maybe they see even like philanthropy as the height of success. Like, what is it for the three? Whatever that thing is for the three that is like their version of successful, the three wants that. And if they don't get it, they feel like they haven't accomplished anything. They feel like they're not valuable.
Interesting.
And because the three is so focused on achieving a certain thing, the three can be the type of on the Enneagram that knows themselves the least, because they're so focused on making themselves into who they need to be to accomplish success that they might not know who they are right now.
Mm.
Interesting.
So, and also the three... tends to be very charming, tends to be very charismatic. They tend to be social chameleons. They can kind of walk into a room and become the person they need to be successful in that room.
They can turn it on, basically.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. They can put that hat on and become who they need to be. And that's kind of another reason that they can have trouble nailing down exactly who they are on the inside. Because they can be anyone on the outside.
I was going to say, I bet that number out of all of them is probably the one that struggles the most with learning to be genuinely them, as Absolutely. Opposed to just putting on the hat they need to wear for the situation.
Yes, yeah, they that type, and then one other that we'll get to, I feel like struggles the most with that. But threes are also amazing people. Like threes are the reason, along with like ones and eights, that things get done in the world. Yeah. You know, any type can get stuff done, right. But as a stereotype, threes get things done. They're efficient. They know what needs to happen and how to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And some of my favorite people are threes. So
I can imagine there that a lot of the analysts and data people and all that, those are they're threes.
You know, could be.
Hard number people.
Could be, for sure. So next is type four. These are kind of the like elusive butterfly of the Enneagram. It's theorized that fours are the most rare, but who really knows, right? Fours have a deep, deep, deep desire to be seen and known for who they are. Mm-hmm. So instead of a two who wants to be loved based on trying to earn that by giving and receiving, fours instead want to be authentically themselves, exactly who they are, and want to be loved for that. They don't want to have to earn it. And fours can feel very melancholy, feel very ostracized when they feel like exactly who they are isn't accepted.
Or isn't enough, almost.
Or isn't enough, or even is too much. A lot of fours, anecdotally, will say that they feel like they are both too much for the world and not enough at the same time. So fours have a very deep sense of being deficient or being broken in some way, because they look out at the world and they see, by the way, the core fear, the kind of like deadly sin of the four is envy. So they look out at the world and they see people having successful careers. They see people happy in relationships. They see people navigating social situations with ease. And they look at themselves and they say, like, well, why don't I have that? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, it could be, but it's not necessarily, I want what you have, that kind of envy. And I want to take it from you.
It's what's wrong with me. Why can't I get that?
Exactly.
Yeah. I can see that.
But fours tend to be very artistic, very creative. You know, pain a lot of times births art. And so fours are very much the bohemian artist of the Enneagram. Their name is the individualist or the romantic.
That speaks to me. I can understand that.
I can relate.
The gentleman that actually introduced me to the Enneagram a few years ago, he was a four. And just hearing him kind of talk about different numbers, this kind of stuff, you know, is very much kind of in the way of like what you're saying. You know, he's since he identified as a four, you know, I feel like had a lot of insight that a lot of people that aren't fours necessarily don't have.
For sure.
I remember one thing he said stuck out to me. He said, you know, because he's a speaker, you know, and so he's like, you know, I can stand up in front of this group of 30, 50, 100, whatever it is, people, and whether it's give a sermon, give a talk, give a lecture, whatever it is, easy. But when it comes to one-on-one conversation with somebody, that terrifies me. And I thought that was always so fascinating, because here it's almost the exact opposite of the cultural fear we almost have as humans, which I don't know if it's number one or number two, but it's either one or number two. It's fear of public speaking.
Right. I figured that was number one.
And so it's very interesting to see that, okay, he's in a situation that, you know, he doesn't have that. It's the one-on-one conversations that terrify him.
Right.
Which is really interesting.
If you think about the four in front of thousands of people, the four doesn't have to ask themselves whether all of those people love them for who they are, right?
Yeah, if all the people are sitting there, it's obvious.
Right, but in one-on-one conversation, that's when you really have to deal with whether or not this person likes you for you.
Yeah.
So, and one other quick thing about fours, they are also typically the most emotional type on the Enneagram. Mm. They feel things extremely deeply. Fours have nowhere to compartmentalize their emotions. They're always up front and center. Yeah. And so they have to deal with them right then. This kind of does two things for the four. One, it either makes them extremely moody or really good at handling their feelings because they have to. And on the other side, it makes them really good sounding boards for other people's pain. And it makes them very compassionate and empathetic.
Because they can relate.
Right. Fours are very comfortable with others' deep emotions because they have to be comfortable with their own.
That's good right there.
That's so fours would be the excellent listeners.
Yes, excellent listeners.
Yes. It's kind of a superpower for the four. Each type, I think, in my opinion, has a superpower.
I
think that's the four. Okay, so type
Moving
five.
Moving on to five, yeah.
Fives are really interesting people. They tend to be very not necessarily closed off, but maybe a little bit quieter, a little bit more low energy because... Mm-hmm. The five wants more than anything to be competent and to be valuable for what they know, what they can give intellectually. And they are afraid that they don't have enough internal resources to handle the world. That's why they're constantly gathering knowledge, constantly gathering skills, because they think they need those things in order to be able to handle the world.
So they're like the nerds of the Enneagram. Is that what I'm getting?
You could stereotype five as nerds.
That's what they would be. They would be like
Revenge of the Fives.
Oh, that's terrible.
Revenge of the Fives.
Well,
Star
you know.
Wars reference.
They could be, yes. A lot of fives are very, very, very smart because
very
they think that
yeah.
they need that in order to be able to go out into the world and contribute something.
Which I could see a lot of fives being the, for the lack of a better term, the nerds of the group because they're all very book smart and intelligent. They mm-hmm. all the ones who had the straight A's, right?
A lot of times, yes.
The geniuses like Albert Einstein and Sheldon Cooper, you know. So.
Yeah, I don't know what type Einstein was. I'm sure that there's some website out there that has a guess.
Oh, I'm sure that Wikipedia has its own opinion on itself.
I'm sure, and we can touch on this a little bit later too. You know, it's so hard to just talk about one number for 3 minutes or so because. You could literally go hours deep into this thing.
On one type, yeah.
I mean, literally.
Yeah.
You could go hours deep into just
really
one
could.
Number.
You really could.
And so it's hard to sum it up in 3 minutes. But
I know.
Moving
so,
on.
Yeah,
moving
well, on. I want to give a little bit more about fives before I move on, because I want to talk about the highs and the lows of each type.
Oh, absolutely. Just to, I was totally. Going to ask what the superpower was of the fives.
Oh, the superpower of the five. So... I would say that the superpower of the five is the ability to look at one subject that they're passionate about and know everything about that thing. They love to research. They love to dive in deep and gather all the little details about that thing. So if you ask a five about their favorite thing, whether it's Lord of the Rings or whether it's like how to be a mechanic, the five will be able to tell you every nitty-gritty detail of that thing because they do love knowledge. Mm-hmm. They really do. They love knowledge. Fives are prone to mystery. They sometimes they can even feel a little bit mysterious. Like, who is the five? Because the five might not let everybody in, right?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And so they can be somebody that's difficult to get to know. But once you do get to know them, it opens up this whole world within them that people don't get to see just by passing them by. So where some types tend to be like more wear their heart on their sleeve, you kind of know, you get a good taste of exactly who they are upon meeting them, never met a stranger. The five, you kind of have to earn the right to see that stuff.
Interesting, yeah.
So fives are really, really cool people, but sometimes they can get overlooked or underrated almost because people don't want to take the time to get to know somebody like that. But once you do get to know a five, you will not regret it. So that's five. Okay, type six. Type six, I forgot to give the name for the five real quick. They're either called the observer or the investigator. Because they kind of sit back and look at the world from a distance.
I'm going to call them the private investigator.
The private investigator. I love that. I'm sure some of them are too.
I will. That's who I would want to be my private investigator.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so the sixth, the loyalist. The sixes, we call them the protector of the Enneagram because sixes can spot danger from a mile away. Sixes are focused on safety and security. They're afraid of being without a support system, right? Okay. And so they tend to build a web of community among people so that no matter what they need, there's always somebody available to them to keep them safe. But also they provide those same things to other people. Mm-hmm. They will be the protector. They are thinking about what could go wrong. What's the worst case scenario here? And if that happens, what do I do? How do I take care of it? Where's the emergency exit? You know, like mm-hmm. where's the fire alarm? The six knows all of those things.
In a way, they're kind of they're the overthinking type that is thinking five steps down the road.
They're absolutely prone to overthinking. They're also prone to a lot of fear and anxiety. Now, if you have anxiety, that does not necessarily make you a six. But if you are a six, you probably struggle with anxiety because if you have the ability to see danger around every corner, that's going to make you feel unsafe, right?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
So whereas somebody else might be oblivious, so they're just like, well, like, you know.
Yeah, I'm more oblivious. I don't ever see the day.
Oh, I'm the same way. Like, I'll walk down the street at night, and I'll be like, right? But, but a six would walk down the street at night, and they would be thinking, like, this is what could go wrong, and this is how I would deal with
it. Yeah, they're the ones who probably have some type of weapon on them at all times,
for sure. But it's not just physical safety. This carries itself into relationships too. Mm-hmm. So sixes like safe, predictable people, not necessarily boring people at all, but people that they know what they can expect out of those people, and they're not afraid that those people will just like do something crazy and hurt them emotionally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So so that's kind of the type six.
Interesting.
They're they're really loving and warm and caring people because they do see danger and they want to keep others safe, both physically and emotionally. Sixes are really wonderful people. Mm-hmm. Now we've got type seven. You can call them a couple of different things. The adventurer, the enthusiast, the epicure, even the epicure as in like the curator of different skills and fun and experiences.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So sevens are super fun. Adventurous type. They are constantly looking for the best thing to do in every moment that's going to bring them the most joy, the most satisfaction.
I wish I was like that.
It's funny you say that. A lot of people are jealous of sevens because they always look like, not always, you know, I don't want to generalize, but they tend to always look like they're having a great time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sevens tend to be very energetic. Now, I've known quiet sevens before, so I'm definitely speaking in generalities, but sevens love to have fun. And one thing that kind of creates in the seven is a fear of not being satisfied. Right. Yeah. And so sevens,
I can see that.
Yeah. Sevens can be sometimes non-committal or afraid of commitment because guess what? If you commit to something and then something better comes along, you miss out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So sevens are very careful.
The fear of missing out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that FOMO is strong with sevens. Oh, yeah. They're very careful to not commit.
But they're also the YOLO number, you know.
They can be. Yeah, for sure. They can definitely be the type to say, like, you know what? I've got one chance to do it. I better do it now.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. Sevens also have, like, just the ability to bring joy to people. They tend to want to pull others into their fun because if you can experience something and it's awesome alone, then it's probably even better with more people, right?
Mm-hmm. That's actually why I don't do a lot of things is because I don't like doing it by myself. I would rather do it with somebody so that way I'm not the only one who's looking stupid.
So then you need a seven.
So I need a seven.
She needs to find yourself a seven.
I need to find myself a seven.
I love it.
That's what I need.
I love it.
I need a seven somewhere.
So sevens can also tend to be a little bit critical, right? Because if they end up getting locked into something that they didn't want to do, that can really get them down.
I can see that.
They kind of want things to be a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. If you can imagine the most fun experience, the best way that something could be, then you're going to want to attain that, right? Because
obviously
you'll think that that's the best for everyone involved. So sevens definitely have an ideal of what things should be, and they can be frustrated or critical if they don't get that. But in general, sevens are really like they're the sunshine of the Enneagram.
They're the sunshine.
And that is their superpower.
Yeah, I know a couple people like that, so mm-hmm. I can see that being...
They can also be very never met a stranger. Like where so whereas the five tends to only meet strangers and they're right, like, stay away from me, you have to earn this. The seven is like, hello, how are you? Like, let's go do something. What's your story? Tell me about you.
Yeah.
And people tend to admire sevens for the way that they can just strike up a conversation and make people feel seen.
So essentially the seven would be the person that you say jump when they're gonna say how high?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, for sure. Yeah. So sevens are...
Those people are awesome.
Also awesome people. Oh my gosh. I just love every type. I'm finishing it up with... Yeah. These people are amazing, but they really... Each type really does.
Has its own unique differences, but they're all still really awesome people.
Exactly.
So, I've heard it described before of... I feel like we're always jealous of another type.
Accurate.
But you're always jealous of another type. Accurate. But I heard it explained to me... when I was first learning about this a few years ago, that it's all, not necessarily, but most likely, it's the number that you hate the most that you are.
That's so real. If you're thinking to yourself, like, man, listening to five, like, I really want to be a five because that sounds great. That's probably not you. Yeah.
Not at all.
But you're listening to a type four, and it's like, oh, man, it must suck to be a four. Like, it must be like discover. That's probably you.
Oh, yeah. I will be honest. Yeah. A side note real quick. I typed myself as a six at first. I took the test. It typed me as a two. Tests are kind of like, you know. You kind of have to do the work yourself. But I typed myself as a six at first, and there was another type that I was like, oh, like, that's definitely not me. Oh, I'm not like that. No way. But guess what? Over 3 months, as I spent more time with the Enneagram, slowly learning about it, I realized that very type that I really didn't want to be was me.
Was you. And that number is?
Yep. Yeah. Well, so, okay, I guess I'll reveal. I'm a four.
Okay.
So I was like, man, I'm not sensitive, moody, and dramatic. No way. Like, that's not me.
Well, I'm sorry I picked four to say it sucks.
No. It's funny.
I'm kidding.
Fours and eights kind of tend to get a bad rap, so it's funny that you say that. But I was like, I'm not sensitive, moody, and dramatic. But it kind of turns out that, like, I didn't know that the strength of my emotions wasn't normal. I kind of thought that everybody felt things as hugely as I do. And, like, that's just not necessarily the case. So, anyway, it's just funny stuff. But, okay, let's move on to eight. Type eights, this is the other type that people kind of hate on. And I hate that for type eights because they are so strong. So eights are the challenger. And right off the bat, that name kind of makes you take a step back and feel a little bit defensive. So I prefer to call the eight the protector. Because the eights, what they desire more than anything is to be in control of themselves. They don't want others to control them. They want to control themselves. And that also makes them... kind of similar to the one, very anti-injustice. Like, they are so big on things being fair. People should never betray people. That's a really big thing for the eights, is they do not want to be betrayed, because that's, I mean, that is wrong, right?
Right,
for somebody
absolutely.
To say they're going to do one thing and they turn around and do another. Yeah. All of a sudden, that takes your control away, because you were operating off of a certain expectation. That person pulled the rug out from under you, and now you have to regain your footing, regain your control. So eights are big on justice, they're big on fairness, and they're big on controlling their own selves, and they don't want to feel held down. And so that can make eights very direct people. They're upfront about what they want, typically. Mm-hmm. If you ask them what they think, they're going to tell you what they think. You know, if you say, like, hey, what do you think about my makeup? And they don't like it, they'll be like, you know, to be honest, I don't think that looks that great on you, or that color doesn't match you, or whatever.
Right.
Or if it's something more serious, like, should I take this job? And the eight sees red flags, they're like, no, you shouldn't.
Right.
They're not going to be like, well...
They're not going to be around the bush.
They're probably not going to, you know, unless they've intentionally practiced speaking in a softer manner. They're probably not going to sugarcoat. And it's because that wastes time, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
I can see that.
When you sugarcoat things, you kind of take other people's control of themselves away because you're softening things. It might be even a little bit manipulative. You're not giving them the whole truth, and then they can't operate off the whole truth, right? So right. Eights are like, this is the truth, and now you can choose what to do with it. Here's what I think you should do with it, mm-hmm. but I don't really care if you choose to take my advice or not. Yeah. What, you know, that's your problem.
Yeah. And you just mentioned something. Would you say that in a way they are afraid of being manipulative?
I wouldn't say they're afraid of being manipulative, but they're definitely afraid of being manipulated.
Interesting.
But yeah, so eights kind of, because they are so direct and they are the most upfront type about their anger, like mm-hmm. if they're mad or they don't like something, they're going to tell you, you know, right. they're not mm-hmm. going to like, they're not going to hide that. Why? Yeah. Why hide it? Right. So people tend to feel like eights are abrasive, but really eights are strong.
Right.
And they are protective of themselves. They're protective of those they care about. Eights are going to make sure that nothing's going on behind the scenes that's shady, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can trust an eight mm-hmm. Because they don't want to be betrayed. They're not going to betray you.
Yeah.
So eights are great champions of people and champions of causes because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. they can take that strength that they have, that power and that drive and that motivation, and they can turn it into like moving forward mm-hmm. towards mm-hmm. a goal. So anyway, those are eights.
Yeah,
we love our eights.
Love your eights.
And I don't ever want to hear from anybody, oh, I don't like eights, because then I'll be like, well, you should love every type.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
And last but not least, thank you for waiting, type nines. Nines are the peacekeepers or the peacemakers. They desire to be free of conflict from the world, 100% free of conflict. And they are afraid of having to come into contact. And because of, conflict. And because of that, they can tend to detach from the world or completely minimize themselves and their own needs. Because guess what? To have needs and to have desires is to naturally put you in conflict with someone else.
That's interesting.
So nines will merge with others. They tend to kind of become one with a group or with a significant other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And take on that personality so that that's they don't have to have their own, right? They don't have to bring their own needs to the forefront. They can just rely on kind of seeming like someone else.
So they're kind of like the wallflowers.
They can be. They can be wallflowers.
And in a way, they're almost afraid to have their own identity.
They are. So like I said, type threes and type nines kind of have trouble finding themselves. Threes mm-hmm. because they can be anyone at any given point mm-hmm. in order to be successful. And nines because they can be anyone at any point in order to not have a conflict. So nines can almost sometimes even find themselves agreeing with things they don't agree with. They can leave a conversation or where somebody is telling them something and realize that they just agreed out loud with everything that person said. And then they walk away and they're like, wait,
what?
I don't actually agree with any of that, but I didn't feel comfortable speaking up because that could cause conflict. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. In a way, like you were talking about the other number, you know, it's more of driven out of success as opposed to. They're driven out of fear almost.
Right. Yes.
To be their own identity.
Right. So nines, because they are so conflict averse, mm-hmm. This does make them able to see every side of an argument. So if they are in conflict with someone, they're like, man, I can really see why this person feels this way, mm-hmm. but I know why I feel this way,
right?
And then somebody else could maybe see it this way, and so they're excellent mediators for other people, and they give excellent advice, and they tend to be very wise, because when somebody mm-hmm. else comes to them with a conflict that they're not involved in any way, the nine isn't involved in, the nine can think about what this person is telling them, explore the possibilities, kind of see all sides, mm-hmm. and offer a way to resolve the conflict in the most peaceful way.
Wow.
So nines tend to be also very merciful, very generous, because they want people to show mercy to them, right? And they don't want to mm-hmm. have conflict, so they tend to also be very merciful. They tend to kind of just see people for who they are and where mm-hmm. they're at. Because, you know, again, if the nine can kind of merge with anybody and kind of see any side, then that means that almost anybody that comes to them, the nine can kind of get. They can kind of understand. Mm-hmm. So nines also just they kind of the sweethearts of the Enneagram. Very kind and gentle people. Yeah. But kind of the thing about the nine is that because they do repress their desires so inherently, mm-hmm. that does build up over time. And eventually, the nine can explode.
Interesting.
They're the type of person who stuffs and stuffs and stuffs and stuff. And then, but after they've been stuffing for so long, mm-hmm. it kind of just gets full and just explodes.
That's exactly right. And so if you know any nines in your life, it's important to ask them, what do you want?
How are you doing?
Like, you know, where do you want to go to eat? Oh, you know, whatever you want. No. Here, how about I give you three choices? Mm-hmm. And then you can pick, right? So give your nines the chance to exercise having their own needs.
In a way, like you said, having their own, it's in that situation, it's important for them to know that it's okay for them to have an opinion.
Yes.
And that they are important.
Yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So those are all nine.
It's so interesting because I just, as you were sitting there naming them off, I'm like, oh, well, I do that. Oh, but I do that too. Oh, mm-hmm. but I do that. So mm-hmm. I can identify just like a little piece of mm-hmm. me with each one of them.
Yeah.
See, and that's why the Enneagram's not about behavior, right?
Right.
Exactly.
You just nailed it on the head because we can all, like, just because I love to have fun, that doesn't make me mm-hmm. a seven.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
The reason I'm not a seven is because my deepest desire is not to be satisfied by my life's circumstances and my right. life's experiences. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not my deepest desire. So even though I might identify with parts of a seven, mm-hmm. their core motivation is not my core motivation.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause that's kind of how I was when you were saying, oh yeah, you love to have fun. And I'm like, I love to have fun. But at the same time, I also can relate with like a nine because I mm-hmm. hate confrontation. Mm-hmm. That is like the worst possible thing. And I would rather just hide my feelings and go along with everybody else's versus giving my opinion. But eventually, I'm going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
So I could, like, I could, there was, like, little parts of me that could relate with each one, which I just thought was completely fascinating. Mm-hmm. But my core actually tends to be more towards a one because I tend to be more of a perfectionist, which he will vouch for.
Yep.
Because I tend to be very structured and I... Mm-hmm. I almost live my life on a schedule almost, and so it's very structured to that.
Do you find yourself being very critical towards yourself when
absolutely.
You don't meet your own standards?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hands down.
That's inner critic of the one peeking mm-hmm. its head up saying,
you're
not good enough.
It's one of the worst qualities that I have, which I admit to myself, and I can at least openly admit here, that is one of my worst qualities, is I am my own worst critic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Side note, advice to ones, when your inner critic pops up, practice speaking to your inner critic and tell it that it's lying to you, right?
Yeah.
You're not good enough. You didn't do this well enough. You need to be better. Practice saying, hey, I hear you. Thank you for the information. But I'm just going to make this small adjustment and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because that's not true.
Yeah, because it's not true. And that's one of the things that I've had to work on, especially during the quarantine. You know, that's one of the things I've been able to learn about myself is who am I?
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, but when he said you were coming out, I was like, oh, good. I can finally learn about this stuff. Like, I've heard about it. And I've gone to like therapists and stuff like that who talk about it a lot in their sessions with different people and things. But it's nice to actually just be able to sit down with somebody and they explain all of it at once. Yeah. And you're not being time limits on it.
It's not meant to be a pin. It's meant to be a tool.
That's right. The Enneagram's not a sword to cut others down.
There you go.
No, we never ever say, oh, you're such a seven. Oh, you're such a nine. You're such an eight. We never say that.
Never do that. No, that's a cardinal sin of the Enneagram.
Yeah. And you never do it. You never turn that sword in on yourself either. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I did that because I'm just such a four. Like, I couldn't help it. I'm just a four.
You can't use your number as a disqualifier for something.
Yeah, you can't hide You can't hide behind it.
Because guess what? The Enneagram gives you knowledge and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And once you have awareness, you no longer have an excuse.
Yeah.
So you can't say, well, I know the problems of the four. So like, that's just how I am. No, I know the problems of the four. So now I can't just say that I was ignorant. I have to deal with it now.
Deal with it now.
Yeah.
Because you were naming them all off. And I'm sitting here thinking either part of myself as each one, or I was thinking of somebody in particular who I knew fit that nail on the head description.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was very fascinating because it explains a lot.
It does.
About who I am and who that person that I was thinking of was.
Exactly.
And I'm just like, it makes so much, it makes so much more sense now.
For
now
sure.
You can like, oh, well, now this is how you deal with that person now. You know, if they're struggling with this or that, then this is how you can deal with it in a nicer way than be coming out and just be like, well, why are you like that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm a foreign, so that's why I'm like that. No, you can't even use it because now I'm like, okay, well, now we can approach it differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've heard it said that, you know, it's okay to not be okay, but as long as we don't stay there.
Yeah.
That's where it becomes a problem. And that's where also I believe the Enneagram can come in. But unfortunately, it's been 45 minutes, and unfortunately, we have just scratched the surface. Which is incredible that, like it we talked about before, you know, we can dig hours and hours into just one number. And the fact that we've talked for 45 minutes and we've just scratched the surface on this thing.
That's
incredible.
So true.
But just briefly, can you give us one example about how the Enneagram is not only enriched, but you've used it as a tool in your life?
Yeah. So I guess I'll call back to what I said about I didn't know that my feelings were bigger and like less manageable, I guess, than the average person. I kind of thought that like when bad things happen, like everybody had to take a 5-hour nap because I just couldn't handle, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I didn't realize also that the amount that I think about myself, fours are very introspective. That's something I didn't touch on, but the amount that I think about myself, the amount that I process why I do what I do, what happened, why am I like this? Who am I? Blah, blah, blah. I didn't realize that that's actually self-absorbed. I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
But it turns out that other types that are more outward focused tend to think about maybe their circumstances or like their career, or they tend to think about their relationships, other people, blah, 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 how they can be, you know, interacting with other people. I'm constantly thinking, not constantly, but I realized that I'm constantly mulling myself over. Mm-hmm. And that's actually self-absorbed. So now that I have that knowledge, I can practice turning my thoughts outward instead of constantly looking inward, turning my thoughts outward to the Lord and to those around me. Right. And I thought I was helpful and I thought I considered others. And, you know, I do. But I realized that I can get out of my head. And I didn't know that it was abnormal. So that's one way that the Enneagram has been useful to me. But
that's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, of course, like I mentioned again, you know, we've barely just scratched the surface of this entire thing. Maybe we'll have to get you back for a part two or
and
dive a little bit more into this kind of stuff. And
And real quick, I would love to talk about my website.
Go for it. That was going to be my next question.
Oh, okay, great. Sweet.
Go for it. So, how can we find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at And I Will. So I chose that name because I want this to be about moving forward, about growth.
That's so good.
Not about staying in place. So I Will Enneagram. So it's andiwillenneagram.com. My Instagram handle is and.i.will.enneagram.
Which will be linked in the description box below just for you.
Sweet. Thank you.
Trinity loves saying that.
It's my favorite.
It's her thing.
It's my thing. He does the opening and I do that.
I love it.
She does that.
So I have a blog. I have that Instagram page. I put all of this, you know, all this information is being slowly uploaded, you know, graphic after graphic to Instagram.
Do you have the Enneagram test on your website as well?
I have not linked a test yet. I might. I would have to play with the idea of linking a test because, like I said, I don't love them.
Right.
Like you said, you're pretty much brand new to this, but the very fact of just the amount of knowledge you already have about this is incredible.
I've been studying for probably 2.5 years now. Yeah. So even though I've only been certified since August, I've been studying for a long time.
Exactly.
And then last but not least, I have coaching options. So if you want help discovering your type, or if you want to dive deeper into your type, or if you want to know how to use your type for growth. I do growth, or I do typing sessions and growth sessions for all of that. And I give a free 20-minute consultation.
That's awesome.
If you ever just want to check it out and see like, hey, is this for me? I don't really know.
Right. And like she said, you know, it's all about going forward. Like I mentioned previously, it's okay to not be okay, but staying there is the problem. Staying in that place of not being okay.
If we can't figure out who we are, how do we know what our dreams are?
Boom, there you go. So
and what's the cost of staying the same?
Exactly.
Good point.
You can't just
stay
the same person over time. As a human, you just grow over time as you age and change in life.
Right.
So honestly, theoretically, your numbers could change as you
your get older. Your core motivation won't change, but the way that you express your type and the amount of other types that you can integrate into yourself, will change.
And maybe that's something a larger discussion we can get into next time about can your number change? Because I've heard some debate about that around the kind of the Enneagram community, you could say. So
gonna have to do a part two.
Yes, yes.
So well, be on the lookout.
Until then, Audrey, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me, Roger and Trinity.
All right, and guys, don't worry. It is linked in the description box below if you want to check her out.
Yes.
And I didn't point this time. So
she didn't point. She always has this thing where she points below. It's like, this is not YouTube trending.
Like the YouTuber, you know, always does that.
YouTuber thing.
It's a thing.
You have to. You have to. You talk with your hands.
I'm going to have to work. I do talk with my hands.
Then again, Trinity does talk with her hands.
I do talk with my hands. That's why I would be so good at sign language. So,
well, guys, thank you so much for joining us again this week. And don't forget to go chase your unknown.